Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle Delino, divorce and family law attorney in Washington State. I am the owner and managing attorney of Delino Family Law Group. We have offices in Seattle, Bellevue, and we serve clients all over Washington. I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Amy Alpeza with Windermere Real Estate. Amy is a certified real estate divorce specialist. She helps people who think they probably can't even work together on selling their homes. She helps people going through relationship transitions, and she should be your go-to for all things real estate and divorce. Amy, how are you today?
I am wonderful. I'm wonderful. Nice to be here and happy that the end of the school year is coming and that summer's on its way.
Yes, thank goodness, right? We need that around here. So it's been nice to have some better weather. So today, everybody out there, we are going to talk about something that if you have kids, you probably need to know about. CPS, Child Protective Services. Everybody's heard of CPS, but what do they do? How can they get involved in your family, whether you're divorced or not? What does it mean if CPS contacts you? What's a CPS investigation? What rights do you have? These are things that people ask kind of all the time. And maybe you have a family situation where you've never had CPS involvement, and that could change the first time you do. Or maybe you have, but it's something I feel like we need to talk about.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, more often than not, it comes up because, you know, one of the biggest factors in divorcing couples are, you know, parenting, right? Their parenting issues. And they don't like one way that one parent parents, or they don't like what's going on in the other household. And so, you know, for our listeners, I think this is a really great topic, especially as we're about to jump into summer and with kids being home, you know, obviously getting out of COVID, we had a lot of, you probably saw a big spike in CPS issues during COVID because yep. The kids were at home going to school. But where do we start with that? Where do we, you know, how does CPS get involved? Do we want to start with maybe that?
I think how they get involved is a really, really good question. So CPS can get involved a number of ways. One, the most common way is a mandatory reporter makes a report to CPS about your family. That could be a teacher. It could be a school. The common ones are like a teacher, a school counselor, a child's therapist. There are mandatory reporters who are required to report certain types of behavior that a kid might tell them or someone might tell them to CPS so CPS can look into it. A real common scenario is kid comes to school and tells somebody, mom or dad or stepsister or brother or somebody in the home did something that was not okay, whether it was abuse or just something that was concerning. And then, you know, a teacher tells somebody and teacher is a mandatory reporter, school counselor, somebody like that makes a referral to CPS. And then CPS takes action from there and they will decide, okay, here's the referral. What does it say? Who is it from? And what action do we need to take? And from there, this is the most important thing I think people need to know. Every time somebody calls me and they say, oh, I have CPS contacting me and CPS is involved, I want to know, have they told you whether it screened into a CPS investigation or have they told you whether it screened into a FAR investigation, which means family assessment response. So mm-hmm. CPS will look or has it screened out and they didn't do anything. Sometimes someone will make a referral and they'll be like, no, we don't need to take action. But a lot of the time, it either goes to an investigation where there will be findings, or it goes to a family assessment response, which is a newer kind of investigation where there's not going to be findings against anybody. Maybe it's the first time they're involved and maybe the conduct isn't that serious. And they just want to respond and see what kind of support the family needs and how they can stop things from happening in the future. So investigation can have significant consequences for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Family assessment response, probably not so much. So somebody makes a referral, CPS decides which way are we going with this, and then the process starts. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm curious, though, what the next steps are, and maybe you can help our listeners understand, like if they have had a call, you know, somebody has, you know, like you said, a counselor at school has made a claim to CPS. What are the next steps? Like you said, we have these two different options, but do they call out to the home?
Good question. And that's a really good question because it's like, it's not always the same. Mm-hmm. CPS has broad discretion to investigate how they want. Usually what they'll do is, this is usually because it's not always, they can start an investigation by talking to the parents. They can reach out to both of the parents and just start asking you questions. They can ask you to come and sit for an interview. They can ask to interview you over the phone. They can ask to do any number of things, or they can just call up and you don't really know that they're even interviewing you and start asking you questions. Sometimes they'll do that and talk to both sides and decide where they're going with it. And then other times they might start by interviewing your kids and you won't know about it. They could show up at your kid's school and talk to your children. You don't have a right to be present for a CPS interview.
Oh, really? So they can do that without you knowing.
Without you knowing. The police can't do that, but CPS sure can. They can, if they believe they're acting in child's best interest, they usually will not tell you. And then they'll just go talk to the kids because they don't want mom or dad to be like, don't talk to these people. Don't do this or that. And sometimes they'll just show up at your house. Sometimes they won't call. Sometimes they'll just show up. Wow. And that can be really scary for people. I recently had, there's all kinds of cases. There's cases with little kids where CPS, you know, might need to schedule an interview because maybe they're not in school or might try to get involved that way. Other times kids are school age. They'll go to the school. I recently had a case where a child was 16 and pregnant and CPS, found out about it because someone called and said, hey, this is what's going on. So they showed up at the house and wanted to see what was happening. Wow. So there's a lot of different angles and ways an investigation can start, but it will usually either start with talking to the parents or they might show up and talk to your kids. They also will start talking to other people. They'll talk to people at the school. They will want to get records. They'll kind of do their own investigation. And that can take a lot of different courses. That's an investigation. A family assessment response, that's a little different. And I've been on a lot of those interviews as well. Well, they'll come out to like my client's home. They'll want to look around. They'll just want to make sure it looks safe. They'll want to sit down and be like, what's going on? What resources do you think, you know, your family might need? Does your family need family therapy? What, you know, what can we do to help support you? And that's not like if there's been serious abuse, that's like somebody said, maybe somebody made a report because somebody was losing their patience and they saw them screaming at the kid. That's not abuse, but it is concerning if it was, you know, pretty bad. So they might offer like, hey, do you need anger management help? Like what's going on? And they'll talk to the kids and make sure the kids feel safe. But a family assessment response is different than an investigation, where an investigation is usually going to result in a finding of abuse against a parent or no finding of abuse. There's a lot more at risk there. A response is not going to result in any findings against anybody. And a finding, if you had a finding of abuse against you, could be a reason to have a child removed from your home. Or for another parent, if you're divorced, to say, oh, this person's subject to a CPS investigation, I'm going to have the kid with me. I also should point this out too. I've had many cases where CPS will start, you asked about what they do. They start an investigation and they'll make a recommendation that the kid not spend time with the other parent at all until the investigation's done. And that's like not a court order, but at the same time, if CPS says that and we can get documentation of it, we're probably gonna be able to say, hey, let's suspend the parenting plan right now. And the court listens to it and they will wait for a status update from CPS very often. If CPS says no contact, that's a good thing to listen to.
Okay. So parents, if one parent is getting a no contact order, whether or not it's gone through the court system, typically parents can implement that immediately.
Yeah. Is that correct? Yeah. I mean, yeah, as you should. I mean, sometimes somebody will say, oh, but I'm in contempt if I don't send the kid. And I'm like, right. But you also need to protect your kid. And if CPS is sending, don't send them. Like, don't send them. And then you might want to get into court to ask your plan to be suspended. But sometimes, you know, CPS might get involved and it might be middle of the night or the morning and they might be like, don't send your kid today. You don't necessarily, you know, you don't, we heard that we have this allegation and we don't want mom to have the kid until we know what's going on. Right. Don't send the kid. You know, you might not have time to get to court right that minute, but if there is that kind of a recommendation, they're taking it seriously. And
as they should.
Yeah, as they should. Exactly. And that's
how long does that last? I mean,
no question. Yes.
Is it indefinite? Is it until it gets settled in court, or?
It's usually like how long it takes for CPS. Well, it can be if there's a court action going on, you can ask for, you know, supervised conduct. Contact or visits. But if CPS says no contact, they usually then are going to be in the middle of an investigation. That could be a few weeks. It could be a few months. It depends on the depth of the allegations. I once had a CPS recommendation, an open case that went on for over a year because there was extreme abuse. And we got a court order to mirror that. But I had another one that was like 2 weeks. I mean, so it really just depends on what's the scope of what's going on here. Like, what are the concerns? and how, you know, how long is it going to take them to talk to people? Because you could also have a party too that is not cooperating. They're not able to interview them. And if you won't be interviewed, they're just going to go ahead and make an assumption and say, okay, we're going to assume this is true because you didn't tell us otherwise and all the evidence suggests that it is. So I also would say it's if you're the subject of a CPS investigation, you should talk to an attorney who knows and understands, because at the end of the day, you have to be careful about what you say, because you could say something that isn't intended to mean anything and they could be looking at it through a totally different lens and you don't even know that. So you have to be really careful if you talk to them. I don't always tell my clients not to. Sometimes I'll tell my clients, hey, you haven't done anything wrong. These are the questions they're going to ask. Let's have this conversation. I will be there to help de-escalate it if we need to. Or sometimes I'll say there's no reason for us to talk to them and we shouldn't. Yeah. So you really also need to think about if you're also being accused of criminal conduct related to a CPS claim, you should not talk to them because anything you say can and will be used against you in criminal court. So it can be a very nuanced issue, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So would that be something, let's say, like there was you know, some kind of a DUI or some type of a, you know, alcohol related incidents or, you know, drugs.
Really glad you asked that. This came up the other day, and this is a common one. If you get a DUI, that's not a reason to call CPS if your kids weren't in the car. If your kids are in the car, I mean, a lot of people get DUI. Everybody, I would say almost everybody at some point maybe had a little too much to drink and drive, right? It happens. DUI is a very common thing that happens. Usually happens to somebody once and they don't do it again. And usually kids are not involved, even if you have kids. Mm-hmm. But if you are driving and you get arrested for DUI and your children are in the car, there will be an automatic CPS referral made. So don't get a DUI with your kids in the car, because CPS will get involved like right off the bat. And the penalties for DUI while you have kids, your license suspension will be longer, your penalties will be more severe. Automatic CPS referral, where then CPS will be in your life needing to find out what's going on, and your kids will be taken right then, probably until someone else can come pick them up by CPS.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Great thing you asked. Also, too, if there is drug and alcohol abuse and there's a nexus between that and the parenting, like maybe somebody is neglecting the kids because they're passed out and there's nobody else there, that's a neglect issue. CPS can get involved for that. If somebody is also furnishing drugs or alcohol to a minor, like their child, or making it accessible to them, that's another thing where CPS can and does get involved, like underage drinking party, 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds or whatever. And mom thinks it's cool to make sure there's alcohol and is like, oh, it's safe if it's at our house. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. And CPS will absolutely get involved. If somebody goes home and says, oh, Mrs. Smith, let us drink. Well, guess what? See, that's all it takes is somebody to tell CPS. Totally. So it's all kinds of different ways they can be involved. Like, it's not just necessarily like I beat my kid. It can be things that are really common like that, you know, and the consequences can be big.
And what about neglect? Is neglect different, let's say, for kids that are under 13 versus kids that are like 13 to 18? I mean,
yeah, that's a good question too. I mean, younger kids that can't, CPS is going to take interest in a case no matter how old the kids are, but the scope is a little different. When a kid is younger, they can't like advocate for themselves. They can't necessarily self-report, right? Mm-hmm. They can't say this is everything that's going on. So they can't necessarily say, hey, I've been at home alone for 2 days, right? But if someone else says they are, that's a 7-year-old at home, you know, overnight is going to be different than a 15-year-old at home overnight. So, you know, different levels of concern and different things, mm-hmm. but CPS will still get involved with both. As long as they're minors, they have jurisdiction to get involved, which is why I mentioned earlier, even like a teenage 16 or 17-year-old that's pregnant, CPS can get involved and see what's going on and make sure it's safe for the child and everybody else. But, you know, the concerns are different, but the considerations are different, but the involvement and the right to be involved is still the same if you're a minor child. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. I'm just thinking of a personal friend of one of my daughters that had some CPS involved. And so curious how that, you know, would affect a teenager versus.
Mm-hmm. Well, with a teenager, the CPS worker will likely actually speak to the child. Mm-hmm. they'll want to talk to the child, and they're going to give the child probably more weight to what the child says than a younger kid, where they might not know. Or younger kids are also really susceptible to being like, oh, I like being at dad's house, and, you know, I don't want to have that taken away because I get, you know, dad gives me this or that here. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different thing than a child who's a teenager that can self-report. More weight is given to investigations where they talk to the children when the kids are teens.
Definitely. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. And then, how would you advise? So you've said, you know, if you've been accused of, you know, neglect or some type of violence, to definitely hire an attorney who, you know, a family law attorney. Are they hiring a family law attorney, or are they hiring a criminal attorney?
That's a really good question. You know, I'll tell you this, when I used to do a lot of criminal work, that was my original background. So I would have a lot of cases where I was involved with CPS. And then when I started doing family work, it worked really well because I already had a CPS background. We have in our office 7 other attorneys, and I would say maybe half of them are well-versed in CPS. So like half of our attorneys, you know, have had that experience, but a lot of family law attorneys have not. It's just not something that everybody gets involved in or is comfortable. I had somebody actually just call up earlier today, and there's a CPS interview tomorrow. And I was like, oh, I can do it, or this person or that person can do it. I actually like CPS interviews. I know it sounds weird, but other attorneys would be like, no, number one, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to do it. And they wouldn't be interested in doing it because they wouldn't be comfortable with it. So, and some criminal attorneys, this is an interesting thing. When I was a criminal attorney, my attitude was a lot more like, no, you should never talk to them. And then as my practice evolved over the last like 15 years, and I started doing family as well, I realized that's always true most of the time from a criminal context. You should usually never talk to them if there's a criminal issue. But at the same time, if you have children and you have a parenting plan issue or a potential parenting plan issue, with the help of a family law attorney, you might be able to talk to them and actually make a better record or protect yourself. Hmm. So you have to really talk to someone and evaluate, A, are there criminal considerations here? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's not. Like, you could yell at a kid and that's not a criminal thing. But it could be a reason that, you know, it could be blown up into something in family court. Or B, if there's no criminal stuff, is there a potential thing with the other parent where you might have those kinds of issues? Or C, if you don't think you have either of those, maybe you need to realize that there are potentially consequences and you need to understand what the risks are. So, you know, I think some criminal attorneys are more comfortable with CPS than family attorneys, but they don't necessarily understand the whole picture. I think somebody who has family law experience and can understand family court and also can be cognizant about your Fifth Amendment rights as a potential criminal defendant is the best person. So you just want to call around and be like, who has experience with CPS? Yeah. A lot of attorneys run from CPS because they don't know the rules and they're scared to deal with it and it seems outside of their scope. But really, once you understand kind of what they can do, what they cannot do, mm-hmm. I've seen enough CPS questionnaires. I know the questions they're going to ask. I can sit there with a client and they feel much more at ease sitting in their kitchen with me sitting there being like, okay, this, that, and having someone to jump in or to say, she's not going to answer that question.
Right.
You know?
Or they could just call you because you clearly know about it.
They could call me too. Yeah. But I mean, you could be listing anywhere in the country. So, but yeah, you could call me and I can tell you what to do. But at the end of the day, you need to keep in mind that sometimes it's like this with the police too. They will try to be really friendly with you and just be like, hey, just talk to us. No big deal. We'll tell you what's going on, to get you to talk to them. And then once you've said something, everything changes. And next thing you know, your kid's being removed from your house. I'm not saying that'll always happen, but you want to be really careful. Like, they're not your friends, no matter what. The police are not your friends and CPS is not your friends. They might be trying to act in a caretaking fashion, because law enforcement comes as a caretaker to help you, or they come to punish you. CPS supposedly always comes in that caretaking fashion, but at the same time, they're looking for anything that could heighten their awareness to say this is a dangerous situation for a child, and they might get it wrong. So you have to be very careful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope that helps. I think it's an interesting situation because a lot of people think, oh no, CPS would never be involved in my life. Well, get a DUI with your kid in the car when you didn't, you know, when you had a few drinks at a work happy hour, or, you know, have, you know, a party at your house where a bunch of kids are drinking and you didn't know. And guess what? CPS is going to be there. Those are very real, like everyday things that can happen to people. Or your kid is upset or dealing with something, as so many kids are now these days in high school and junior high, and goes to school and says something to a counselor or whatever. And next thing you know, CPS is involved. So you really, you can't think that it's a problem that only happens to other people, if that makes sense.
And it can happen whether you're divorced or whether
you're married too, right? Yeah. It can happen like in your home when, you know, you're married and there's no issue. And then like, maybe you don't have to worry about a divorce case, but you know, it's still something that can really wreak havoc on your family. Or maybe you're long divorced and now the other parent's going to use this as ammunition. Or maybe you're in the middle of a divorce and maybe this is why you're getting divorced. So there's all kinds of different things. It's a problem that CPS involvement can be a good thing. It can also be a bad thing. So I'm not saying it's always a good or a bad thing, but it's something that can affect anybody that has kids, any kind of family structure, right? So if they contact you, your big takeaway is contact an attorney and understand what your rights are. If you feel that someone's been abused, whether it's your child or another child, you can make a CPS report. And I think the takeaway on that is to know that your identity will be kept confidential. Sometimes it's really easy to figure out who it is that made the report, but you know, you can make a CPS report if you feel need to. And it's pretty easy to find their information and call. And then they'll screen it either into that investigation or family assessment response, or if they think it doesn't warrant anything, they'll screen it out. So, you know, it's just something I think that's good for people to know about.
Yeah. And how, if you were going to give a percentage, how many cases that are, you know, going through divorce, how many of those do you think CPS is involved?
Not that many. Okay. So I would say maybe 10% or less.
Okay.
Well, that's I would say it's more common that it happens post-divorce. Like it more common that like parenting plan modification, somebody wants to modify their parenting plan because CPS was called. Like I have a case, maybe 10% is too low. I don't know. Not any more than 20. It really depends on the kind of cases I think that you deal with. We'll deal with a lot of high conflict custody. So I've had a client that's been a client for years and we did the divorce and then, you know, everything was fine during the divorce. And then over the past, I'd say 4 years, CPS has been involved with the other parent like 4 or 5 times. So we've had to like come back and deal with, you know, getting restrictions or changing the parenting plan because of CPS being involved. Daycare called CPS, school called CPS, you know, a therapist called CPS. So when that happens, then we have to go, okay, does what we have work in family court or do we need to go back and change it? But I get a lot of those cases post-divorce. A few times I've had like the DUI situation triggering a divorce and then you've got CPS involved while that's going on because the person also had clear substance issues. So it can be any time, but I would say during divorce, not that many, maybe 1 or 2 out of 10, but post-divorce, then, you know, people, you have 2 separate households, all this kind of stuff going on. And then when something happens, we tend to find out about it a lot more then. Right.
Right. No, that's
Awesome.
Well, I think these are, I mean, hopefully our listeners got a lot of really, positive takeaways in terms of what to do, what not to do.
And, totally.
Just a really important issue in protecting our kids. And
yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, the last thing I'll say is, you know, you have to look out for yourself with CPS, but you have to also know, and a lot of people will vilify them and say that they're just out to like hurt people, and they're not. They really are. I mean, I've known a lot of CPS workers, and for the most part, they really are trying to do their job, which is, hey, I have to investigate because someone said something happened to a child. So you have to strike a balance between understanding that and also wanting to protect yourself if you're the subject of an investigation. So they're in a tough spot too, but they're trying to do what they need to do. You just need to realize I need to protect myself and my kids. And sometimes I need help in understanding how to do that. So, anyway. Well, thanks for joining us today, everybody. This was a good one. I hope this will be helpful to people. Have a great day and we'll see you next time.